We're at the second class of the 48 Ways. I thank you all for coming. This class is called Listen Effectively. Number two is Listen Effectively. It's the second in the Pirkei Avos, in the sixth parak in Pirkei Avos. I'm about to give out a handout, which is called Shmia Sa'ozen, listening carefully. I'm sorry? I'm gonna give out handouts in a minute. I'm going to give out handouts, and I just want to start with a little introduction. So again, whoever wasn't here by the first class, what we're doing, the lectures that we're discussing now, the 48 Ways to Wisdom, is a classic and a... We just started right now, so we're perfect. The lectures we're giving now is based on, and it's Rav Noach Weinberg's work. Rav Noach Weinberg was the dean and Rosh Hashiva of Eish HaTorah, and he put out many, many classic and brilliant pieces and lectures and works, and one of them is the 48 Ways to Wisdom, which is based, again, on the sixth parak in Pirkei Avos, which talks about the 48 ways to acquire Torah, the 48 ways to acquire knowledge, to acquire, really, to understand the world. What I'd like to do the first few minutes of each lecture is to review and the takeaways and what we might hopefully grew from last week on the prior week. So last week, what was last week's lecture? Anybody remember the title? I will tell you the title.
To be consistent.
The actual title was to be aware of every moment. To be aware of every moment. So I'm going to go, whoever was here, if you could tell me, this past week, was there anything that you did that was different?
I went to a dentist, and I had something, a baby, you know what it was. And as I was laying there, and it was not exactly, I didn't feel like in seventh heaven. So I said,
That's the exact example we gave last week, that you want to constantly, right, that was on the sheets, to want to be constantly learning. I'll give you a copy if I can find from last week, right. I actually don't have with me, but it's easy for me to get, I have one that I guess I can give out. I'll get another copy, I'll be able to email it to you. What we spoke about was to be aware of every moment. So we were talking about wherever you are, it's constant learning. You don't need to be in the base medrash. You should be learning 10, 12 hours a day or 2 hours a day, anything that we're doing. Right. You don't, with the base medrash or the library or the kitchen, that constantly to grow. If you're touring, learn everything you can about the country that you're going to. If you're exercising, anything that you do, give it your full awareness to. That's what's called being aware of every moment. The other, we were talking about the C, one of them is being consistent according to schedule. We spoke about that college classes typically are at the same time every day, most of the time. It's at 5 o'clock or 4 o'clock in a given time. We want to be consistent. We also spoke about constant repetition. We explained that the same way that the discussion that we gave in the pitgam, the line, so to speak, the slogan that Rav Noach used to say is that wisdom is to the soul like food is to the body. That the same way that food, although you can break it down in different ways, when you're talking about food, there's a minimal of four ways that food is prepared. You first have to plow the land, then you have to fertilize the land, then you need to seed, and then you need a harvest. You can come up with different subsets or come up with more. Those are the four that Rav Noach would say. He said the same thing when it comes to wisdom. Our soul needs wisdom. And the only way we can internalize it is if we at least minimum, like they say in Hebrew, or minimum, the minimum amount is four times. If you don't review something four times, it's nothing. Because you go ahead and say something or you learn something, and then the example I give all the time, including last week, the husband goes to the shul, and he comes home, he's ready to have lunch, and the wife says, honey, so what did the rabbi have to say? And he comes back and says, oh, he was amazing. He was just off the charts. What did he have to say? He spoke beautifully. Bottom line, what did he say? I can't really put my finger on it. I know it had to do with Judaism, but I can't put my finger on it. So why? Because we're not reviewing. The only way to internalize is to review.
Four times before
That is perfect. You should know it's a halacha that I only learned later in life, because I read from the Torah also, but Rav Cohen, I think Rav Daniel mentioned to me, or I saw, that before you go up to lain from the Torah, before you read from the Torah, we're reviewing for a few minutes from last week, Mrs. Weitzman, before you go to the Torah, you're supposed to review it four times. Again, this concept of four. So I tried to do that. You have to review four times. You're speaking in front of you're reading in front of a congregation. What are you doing if you're not prepared? You must go over it four times.
There's so many things that we review in our fellows at certain systems, and to do three times.
Like what? What are you referring to?
Well, first thing, for Bonos, there's certain lines that say, if you're in the show, the length of it. I think they're three times.
Oh, three. I don't know. That's a good question. That's a very good question. We have to come back and take a look at that. I don't know. I know that this is the halacha that it says, speaking about laning, and this is again what the Rav Noach quoted from a chazal, that we're supposed to review four times. So that is a good question. So referring also, what we spoke about with the C's, number one was again, or number two was consistent, like I just said. Number two is continuous with that discussion. The Vilna Gaon, the great Vilna Gaon said, learning 3 hours and 59 minutes. Well, how was the concept that he said? The Vilna Gaon would say, the 18th century scholar said that the first 3 hours and 59 minutes of studying something is just stoking the furnace. By the fourth hour, the pot is boiling. Most of us, again, like most of us that have ADD in the world, which is 90% of us or so, and I can't give you the exact statistics, go down, you have a cup of Coke, you're studying for your final 10 solid minutes, you open the window, you close the window, you call your mother, then you go for a walk, sitting down, and this is a challenge for most of us. The key is to be continuous without interruption, consistent according to schedule, repetition and review and give yourself slogans. Again, remember the Alamo was the example we gave last time. Whatever slogan works for you, and I gave a slogan from last week, if anybody remembers. Very impressive. Very impressive, Mrs. Rosenblatt. Very impressive. It was Eminem. Mode ani, mode. And what was it? Mode and morning. Mode and morning. What I was mentioning last time, when we spoke about the end of the last lecture, is to, since the concept and the whole lecture last week was awareness, to wake up in the morning. Wake up in the morning and say, mode ani lefanecha. I am being molded to you. I'm thanking Hashem. I'm acknowledging that you gave me back myself. You returned my soul. Sleep is a portion of death. If it's 1/60th, I'm not sure. We should wake up in the morning, and what Reb Noach used to do and train all the time is to constantly thank for what we have. Again, the simplest one I said last time was what? What to thank for? What, that we can see. We can see. Everything else is moot. Everything else is secondary. Everything else is so inconsequential. We can see, period. We don't need to get on to anything else. We don't need to get on to the materialism. Yes. That what, eating?
Breathing
isn't bad. Breathing is not bad. That's not too bad. I'll give you credit. I'll give 2 points, and you have 2 points for that one. Breathing is not bad. But again, so to pick something, and then he will go. He would say, Rav Noach, to go and take a look and count for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes. It gets harder after that time for all the good you have. If you have 10 fingers, a lot of people don't. Some people don't have that. 10 fingers, 10 toes. We can see. We can walk. We can breathe. We have our faculties about us. And go through all the wonderful things we have. We're taking that for granted. So that was last week. Again, Eminem was Moda and morning, Moda and morning, that goes well together. So we have Moda and morning. Now we're going to jump in to this class. This class is called Listen Effectively. It's way number two. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I did not print out Mrs. Weitzman 25, but I did print out more than 8, so I didn't get it. I did not get it right on tap now. I guess everybody must be trying to park outside. But we're going to move forward, and we're going to hopefully have a good time doing it. As I mentioned last time, this class, Rav Noach's power was the fact that his brilliance was so simple. If you read this, and I hope you do when you have time, if you give it to somebody, you know, even a teenager, they'll read it and they'll say, this is really very simple. It seems simple. But as you review it and you go through the depths of it, you'll see how brilliant it is. It seems simple, which is the best way to teach something, and it's the best way to learn, because if something is overly complex, it doesn't have an impact upon us. The goal, again, is to read this, to review this, to internalize it, and primarily to have a takeaway, meaning have it change our life. If we do these 48 ways and really make it a part of us, our life will be different. So similar to last week, I'm going to go, I'm going to read, simple as it is, and then I'm going to interject at certain times. The floor will be open for questions in the beginning or in the middle, whenever somebody feels like, as long as we have to finish the lecture. But the floor, if you have a specific question, let's go. Way number two, listen effectively. When the media hits you with another message, we're getting a lot of that now with the campaign, don't take the idea for granted. Listen for the message behind the message. Analyze and question. Analyze and question. Were you ever in an important conversation and you felt like you weren't getting your point across? You started shouting, do you hear what I'm saying? You're not paying attention. Do you hear me? Everyone is guilty of this. How many times do we think we're listening to the other person only to find out later that our mind was somewhere else? Before you decide whether to accept or reject an idea, before you argue, before you make statements, before you decry, first make sure you're being objective. That's a very important word for this class, objective. Otherwise, you're expressing an emotional prejudice, not an intelligent opinion. So again, these two first paragraphs are telling us that we have to listen, we have to hear, and not with emotion. If you're going to express yourself with emotion, that's not an intelligent opinion. Let's continue. Shmiat ba'ozen, which is what this is number two in the Pirkei Avos, this is it. The first one was Torah, Talmud Torah, I don't have it in front of me. And the second one was, the second one is this, Shmiat ba'ozen. I should look it up to be 100% sure. Let's take a look at the exact wording. Here we are. In the sixth parak, it says again, the Torah is acquired with 48 ways. The first one is Talmud, learning, awareness, as Rav Noach translated, and Shmiat Ozen, listening with your ear. Now, I happened to have been sitting with David Gerwitz. I was at a wedding last night, and he said Ozen. He came up with it either last night. Ozen in Hebrew, which is ear, sounds a lot like also listen. Ozen, listen. That was a take that he had on it, which was an interesting thought. So Shmiat Ba'ozen literally means listen. How? Listen with your ears. When the Torah uses the word Shema, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, hear, O Israel, it implies a deeper level of listening, focusing, paying attention, understanding, putting into action, zero in on what is being said and let the message penetrate your thoughts. Effective listening means three things. Number one, hearing the words. You should know that is so critical, and you think, again, so simple. You have to hear the words. We have to hear the words. Similar, this is a book, Praying with Fire, when we're davening. The two things that we must have when we're davening, one of them is an awareness, which is actually last week, an awareness. Actually, I'm putting this together on the spot. It's a pretty good one. 2 points for me if I get it right. It's an awareness that we're in front of who? In front of Hashem. Very often people will daven. They don't even know. I was like, did I daven? Did I not daven? Am I at the car wash? Am I in the office? It's an awareness that we're in front of Hashem. And number two is understanding the words we're saying. Some people can daven beautifully and eloquently and read the words, but it could be in Chinese. If they don't understand the Hebrew, that's why English art school gets such credit. We need to understand. So it's an awareness like last week, and I'm connecting it to listening. Number two, understanding the message. Number three, yes, you should be hearing, or you should be, again, not disturbing the other person, but it should be Shmiat Ozen, which is this exact lecture, putting it into action. So, we're going to be talking a little bit about there. So here, what we spoke about last week, we asked the question again. We just spoke about Shema, Shema Yisrael. Shema Yisrael is most likely the most important and fundamental and foundational pasuk that we have in the Torah. The Chazal speak about this, the Rabbanim speak about it, but one, at least according to one sheet that we might even hold like this, is that Shema is the most fundamental part. Now, we spoke about last time, most adult and even children who grew up Orthodox know the Shema by heart. They know Shema. A requirement in the Torah is that we say Shema in the morning and the afternoon and at night. Why? Why do I need to be saying Shema in the morning and night? I know it. All of us know it, or most of us know it. The rabbis know it. Why do we need to repeat the same thing over and over again? The answer is for this point. What is it? Right, we can't forget. Like I said last week, the Shema is in our mezuzah. The Shema is in the tefillin. The Shema, the tzitzis we wear is also from the Shema. It's constant, it's repetition. But the key, if you think about it, this was an insight, again, Rav Noach, it doesn't spoon feed us, that's why it's so deep over here. If you think about it, the most foundational pasuk in the Torah, which people will say before they jump in the lowland in the fire, or during the times of martyrdom and during the course of history, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, what does it start with which word? It starts with this class. Listen. Listen. So why didn't it say, why does it listen Israel? It should say, when I was looking at this over again today, why does it listen? Say, study. It should say, do. What do you think? Why does it say listen? Listen. Our most foundational pasuk in the Torah is listen. Why would you think?
But it doesn't really mean listen, it's hear.
What's the difference?
Our sheep is to listen. Maybe hearing is a deeper level.
That's
nobody
internalizing.
Listening may be superficial, and hearing is it goes in your ear.
Right. I'm saying, Shemar, this hear or listen, that's a good question, that you're saying hear means a deeper internalizing, and listen is just to listen with my ear. So either way, so it does mean Shema, which translates hear, O Israel. It is a deeper. So so I guess that's the answer. We're learning here that hearing is so fundamental. It's even on a first step. I can't study until I hear. I can't do until I hear. I have to internalize it. That's a challenge, especially in this ADD world that we have. Yes, exactly what we said here. That's number two. Understanding the message.
Even nowadays, when people want to show that they have empathy for somebody or something, they say, I hear you.
Right, I hear you. To show you that I got it. I understand it. So define your terms. This is a very important part over here. I was once talking to a tourist on his first visit to Israel. He seemed disenchanted. They call this the Holy Land, he said. I've been up north, I've been south, I've been to Jerusalem, Masada, all over, and there's nothing holy about this place. So I asked him, tell me, are you a befufstik?
What is that?
What? So he answers, what's that? Just answer the question. Are you a befufstik or not? I didn't ask you what a befufstik is. Are you a befufstik or not? How can I answer when I don't even know what you're talking about? Aha, I stopped him. And holiness? Is it angels flapping their wings down the street in rainbows of color and light, swirling in and out of rocks? Do you know what holy is? You're going ahead and saying, this place is no holier than Tokyo. You don't know your terms. We throw around concepts, but often our thoughts are vague and unsubstantial. Without an objective definition, we can't begin any intellectual process. Are you a good person? Ask that to anybody on the planet, by the way. Are you a good person? Of course I'm good. What kind of insulting question is that? So tell me, what's a definition of a good person? That's a very important question. If you really desire to be a good person, you need more than feelings to determine whether you're reaching your goal or not. You'll need a clear way of measuring it. Otherwise, people can do whatever they feel like doing and paint themselves good. Even Hitler, Yimach Shemay, presumably had a goal of quote-unquote doing good, ridding the world of Jewish vermin. But somewhere, something went wrong. Once you have an objective definition, then you can determine if your life is consistent with that definition. Rabbi Foyer, Rav Avraham Chaim Foyer, was one of the Chashev Rabbanim here. He made Aliyah a little while back. He once told me, I was having a discussion with him, and he said that the famous saying that we say in the States, that the road to Gehenim was paved with good intentions. Everybody has good intentions. The Hamas bombers think they're great. They don't think they're evil. They, Yimach Shemam, think they're great. And they believe they're doing it with a conviction. So we need to understand, what does good mean? Because every single person thinks they're doing good. You can find a very few people in the course of history that really wake up and say, I'm an evil person. They believe that they're doing good.
Is that called moral relativism?
Excellent.
Right,
correct.
The truth is from Hashem.
Correct.
So everything from God is the truth. But other societies, right, and other cultures what are they using as their basis?
Exactly, exactly. Right.
How are you defining morality?
Right, right.
It is about definitions.
Right. It's about definitions, and it's about, right, why am I right and they're not wrong? I mean, that's a whole concept of all the lectures and all the studying. If a bunch of mortals came together and he put down a book of laws, then we might be right, we might be wrong. Again, I'm jumping all the way to the end. But since we believe that this was given from a divine being, i.e. Hashem, therefore I already have a definition of good. The definition is what the Torah writes. It's not what I decided or he decided or any of our... Here I have a foundation, using your word. Here I have a foundation. It's true a person can twist anything, but the more clarity you've got, the harder it is to twist. Now, it's funny, I have a friend of mine who I might have mentioned him last time also, and I get him on the tape every so often, Stephen Oster. We were going back and forth. He wanted to write a book, which he didn't, and he had a concept, he called it Listen to the Whispers. Listen to the Whispers. And I wasn't going to write any part of the book, I just was focusing on the title. It's a lot easier to do that. I said, not listen to the whispers, listen to your whispers. I felt very proud of myself. Listen to your whispers. We happened to found out after, I happened to have seen on my shelf, I don't know, years later, Rabbi Friend. Right, is it to your messages? Right. So it's listen to your messages, the 2 points from me, although he said messages. It's the same idea, but I have, you should know. Because again, it's listen. So what do I do now? I keep, and I don't put in enough, I keep on my BlackBerry when a message happens to me. When something happens, I keep track of it. Because what happens is that, again, like last week's class, if we don't review it, we can forget it. Hashem could have spoken to us a week or two ago from and say, how are you, talk to us, and literally in a week or a month or 6 months later, literally we will forget. I can't remember right now, it's embarrassing. The whispers, something's happened to me like even 2 weeks ago, now it's coming back to me as I'm talking to you. There was one thing even literally just happened to me. I was wanted to talk to one particular Rosh Hashiva who I didn't speak to in weeks. I wanted to talk to him about something, some business. I didn't speak to him in weeks. And I mentioned it to somebody, I really need to speak to him. And then literally 6 minutes after, his right-hand man called me up that he wanted a favor. It was just off the charts. I'm happy I put it down. There's so many whispers that we have in our life, but the only way that we'll get to it is if we have to record it. We have to constantly review. So that's listen to your whispers. It's a concept that we can do on our own, something that you hopefully remember from this class. The next part over here, and the point is I want to get everybody out of here by 9 o'clock. The I-U-He game. This is an interesting little tidbit, and I'd love to get your takeaway from this after we do it, to see what you come away with. The 48 ways is a concept called the I-U-He game. It's based on the premise that we usually describe people on three levels. When we refer to ourselves, we paint the best picture possible. With others, we don't want to be insulting to their face, so we paint them gray. And when someone is not around to defend himself or herself, we paint them black. So bottom line, I am white. You, if I'm talking to you face to face, second person, you are gray. The guy not in the room, he's black. So he gives an example. You're the passenger in a car careening 90 miles an hour down a winding mountain road. As you grip the dashboard in fear for your life, you turn to the driver and say, aren't you being a bit foolhardy? Me? Oh no, I'm brave. I'm not afraid of anything. If you're lucky enough to live to tell about it, you say, another guy. So again, the driver himself, because we are all good to ourselves, refers to himself as brave. To his face, although you want to strangle him, you call him, quote, a little bit of a decent term that you can swallow, foolhardy. To a third person, he's a reckless idiot. Which one is a reality? By working through objective definitions, we can assess a situation without underlying personal feelings getting in the way. Brave equals taking a necessary risk for a worthwhile purpose. He gives a great example. Rushing into a burning building to save children trapped inside. That's brave. Foolhardy. taking an unnecessary risk, yet with a noble purpose. Example, rushing in to save children from a fire, but without any protective gear. You're doing the right thing, but you're being a fool about it. What's C, a reckless idiot? Taking an unnecessary risk for no worthwhile purpose, rushing in just to watch the beams fall down. That's a reckless idiot. So, back to the mountain road. You turn to the driver and say, why are we risking our lives? Without emotional, I just gave some emotion. What is the worthwhile purpose? Again, you have to have your real composure to talk that way when you're about to, you know, jump, fall off a cliff. What is the worthwhile purpose? The driver will have to agree he's being a reckless idiot, you hope. Right. Not necessarily, that's right. That's being an intellectual. Leading with your head rather than muddling through life based on feelings alone. Otherwise, you're always stuck on the level of, I'm brave and he's a reckless idiot. This is the I, you, he game, so please.
But this is a negative example.
Okay.
I mean, you know, it's a negative example.
Right.
I can think of other, you know.
That's the whole point. Because if it's not negative, then you are the negative.
You're
not
brave. Right. No, but I'm saying the example that he's using,
right,
he's calling it the I, you, he game.
Correct.
The example he's using is,
and we're using,
for example.
Right, the example. Right.
My son, and you know, maybe this wasn't an IUP game, but I was describing what he was doing. And the example that I was describing, I was talking about him.
Right.
But I'm describing him and the actions that he's doing in a very, very positive way. This is just. I don't get the point of it. I mean, I understand what he's doing in
right.
this example, but
right.
it's a negative example.
Right.
Why would you call it an IUP game other than this is? It's negative.
Now he's saying that. Situation, you're doing it, it's okay. Mm-hmm. If somebody else is doing it, he's an idiot. Mm-hmm. And if the person that you're talking to is doing it, you might not like it, but you don't have the nerve to really be so harsh on it. But it's completely different what you're saying.
Yeah.
It's completely different. So it's like not seeing yourself,
right.
not being aware because you're blind. I'm doing it, it's brave. But if I would see someone else, then I would realize.
Right, right. The example, to further crystallize, it is all the examples that Ramnach gave, and he gave a few other ones about a child to a parent. They are all negative because we're focusing on, I'm great, and he's a reckless idiot. It is focusing on the negative in these examples. The IU he gave from all the examples that he gave is what we're trying to get here, again, now that we're already halfway through, is to start understanding. We have to listen, and we have to be able to articulate and be on the same language. That's what he's building up to. You'll see as we're going further. So this is a negative example for that reason. Get back to the basics. We need to get our definitions right. He's going to explain further. To get your definitions straight, start with the basics. Think of concepts that you use all the time, fundamentals upon which you've built your life. Don't use words until you have a definition. You'll be surprised how much you've assumed about a particular idea and how that assumption has guided your life, i.e., and you might be wrong. You believe in, quote, underlying tolerance. What do you mean by it? You believe in justice, truth, love, freedom, fairness. Ask yourself, what do these ideas really mean? If it's a basic idea that shapes your world outlook, and many of the prior words do, you had better know what it means. So he gives an example over here. Take the example of free will. Judaism says that free will, and Rav Noach spoke about free will all the time. Judaism says that free will is a decision between what you want to do and what you feel like doing. I'm going to repeat that. This is so foundational, so critical, that Judaism says free will is a decision between what you want to do and what you feel like doing. For example, what? We're going to see right now. If you harm someone, you know that you want to apologize. My inner core wants to apologize. Sure, it's the right thing to do and will make peace, but you don't quote-unquote feel like doing it because it may be embarrassing or it's unpleasant. This concept is also, looks so simple, the words are so simple, there's no SAT word in here, but it's so profound because we all want, as he might say here soon, most of the world. Nobody says, you know what, I really want to be mediocre. I really, you know, I feel like I want to be mediocre. Nobody wants to be mediocre. Everybody we have, whether it's subconscious, some of us know and can feel it more, every human wants greatness. Right. It takes effort. So we want greatness. But I don't feel like waking up at 5:30 in the morning. I want greatness, but I don't feel like taking the extra step and having to do the work. That is the difference between want and feel. So whenever anybody says, or if we say to ourselves, I don't want that, we do want it. We don't feel like doing it. With rare exception, no one constitutes in the sense of evil, ooh, I want to be bad and inflict suffering. We choose evil because in the short term, it's a less painful way than dealing with a difficult situation. We do what we feel like doing because it's easy. So he's saying over here definitions. I gave one definition last week. The definition I gave last week was a definition of love. Again, we use people love, 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 love. Getting, what does love mean? So love, again, as Renacki would say, is the emotional pleasure, and you might want to write this down because I think it's awesome personally, the emotional pleasure one has when focusing on the good of another. Love means the emotional pleasure one has when focusing on the good of another. And this answer I mentioned last time, such a question that many of us have. The Torah says, love your fellow like yourself. How can you do that? There are plenty of people that get under our skin. How can we do that? It's not realistic, and we know the Torah is being realistic. The answer to that, and we can relate to that with family members, children, different people in our life.
Some are virtuous. But in love, if you love somebody, you don't see their what they do wrong. If you love them on the blind, you don't even see it.
Sometimes you
can,
sometimes you just, you might love
them
in spite of it,
right.
But you might love
them.
No, sometimes you just don't see it.
No, so that, but true love, as Renach would explain, is you know the person. We all have our faults. We are human. That's the definition of being human, part of the definition. We have faults, but we're focusing on the good. Everybody there, we know in our lives, there's certain people that get under our skin, and it's hard. It's easy to lecture about it. But what Renach was saying is if you focus on their good, everybody has good. The person who's stingy has a lot of other good qualities. The person who gets angry because that's their nature has other good qualities. If you focus on the fact that they're angry and that you think it's a terrible meter, which it's one of the worst in the world, if you focus on that like most people would because it's right there standing in your face, you won't be able to love that person because you're going to focus on the bad. Good points of another, correct. Focusing on the good that they do, not on my, focusing on the good. Another definition, this is what we're talking about over here. Go back to the basics. Another definition Rav Nach would say, which he called the secret, I call it at times the secret of life, and he calls it the definition. It's the definition of happiness. Happiness, and this is also a major takeaway, I think about this all the time. Happiness is the emotional pleasure one has when focusing on the good that they have. Happiness is the emotional pleasure one has when they focus on the good that they have. Here we're talking about not the good that I'm giving, or not the good, here the good, what I have. I have eyes, Baruch Hashem, I have feet, I have a family. I'm focusing on the good. All of the folks in Beverly Hills or on Park Avenue or wherever they might be, that 90% of them literally are going for therapy. While they have what the American and Western civilization for the past who knows how many hundreds of years believes, they have wealth, they might have everything, they might have the family, they have fame, they have power, they have everything which the secular Western world believes is a success with a capital S. They have all of that. And 90% of them are on therapy. Why? They have it all. Because they're focusing on what they don't have. Nobody in the world, including Donald Trump, who's making news today, has everything. Nobody has everything. So if you spend your time with all of those people doing it, it's a challenge for all of us too. Trust me, we're all human. Life is about growth. If it was so easy, then it wouldn't be an issue. What those people and many of us are focusing on when we're upset, when we're not happy, is what we're missing. We're missing this and we're missing that, and everybody's missing. Everybody's missing. But look at what we have. So that's what we're all said again. I can see everything else, or I can breathe. Everything else is secondary. Everything else is secondary. Focus, and it's hard sometimes, but sometimes as you build like any muscle, it really can be tremendous. Daniel, I called him tonight, Rabbi Koren, I asked him, I said, you know, give me some of the definitions. I'm giving the lecture on listening effectively. So we went through a couple of definitions. He said an interesting one. He said joy, and I believe I wrote it down earlier, because I gave the definition of happiness. He said joy is anticipating the emotional pleasure one will have when they have something. Joy is the anticipation of that experience, the anticipation of that experience or emotional pleasure one will have when they get something. So even before I get it, I want X. I can anticipate it because I'm focusing on that, what I'm going to be getting, and have an enjoyment. Joy, enjoyment. I came up with that myself, 2 points, Neiman. So joy, enjoyment. I can enjoy something even if I don't have it yet. So that, I'm just thinking as I'm talking to you, somebody can be, you know, in a prison, or somebody can be, but if they see, they're in the worst situation, but they know they're going to be freed in 30 days. They could have joy then. They could have joy right then and be the happiest person in the world, because they're anticipating it. This is something, actually, I'm just thinking as I'm talking, we're all here for 120 years, that even whatever challenge we have, we know that after 120, we will have that. So however difficult life is, we know that this is just one minor step in eternity, and we'll talk about eternity in a couple of minutes as well. So those are definition, getting back to the basics. The next part, again, so we said over here, I'll just read it quickly, although I said outside, apply this definition of free will to your life. Do you want to be great? Sure, but you don't feel like making the effort. You feel like postponing, procrastinating, ducking the issue. I don't really want to be good. I only want to be average. Really? You want mediocrity? Of course, and I want greatness, just not today. Why not today? Because I don't feel like it. I don't feel like waking up early. I don't feel like going to work. I don't feel like going to school. Do you have a goal? You know how you can do it? It's just too painful. Make the decision and nothing will stop you. That's using your free will. It's up to us. Greatness is up to us. Objective argumentation. In the Gemara, which many of us spend a lot of time on, this constant, the way you building up, if you look, sometimes somebody can come in, and even now I question it, it's challenge all the time. It's constantly, what does Rav say, what does Shmuel say? It's back and forth, machlokas, argumentative, objective argumentation. Two of the primary famous disputants, as he writes, Baalei Plukta, in the Gemara, are the Academy of Shammai and the Academy of Hillel, and they're constantly arguing throughout the Gemara, throughout Shas. And most of the time, a significant majority of the time, we paskin, we hold like Beis Hillel. And the answer is right here in the paragraphs. It's a fascinating answer. It says here, they argued about almost everything and saw the world from nearly opposite perspective. For example, Beis Hillel said, and this is a great example, we should light one Hanukkah candle the first night and add each one candle each subsequent night, like we do today. The first night we light one, the second night we light two. It's called Malin B'Kodesh. We go up in holiness. Beis Shammai, on the other hand, says light 8 candles the first night and then decrease it to one night, one, which makes sense also. If you think about it, I have 8 days of Hanukkah, now I have 7 days of Hanukkah, light 7, I have 6 days of Hanukkah. What Beis Shammai says makes a lot of sense if we take a step back, no? Jewish law follows Beis Hillel. Why? Because in any agreement, look at the simplicity but the profundity here. In any agreement, Beis Hillel would always first state the opinion, not anticipate, but he would state the opinion of Beis Shammai and only then state his own opinion. He would first say what the other person had to say. In this way, Beis Hillel's position was deemed more objective, reflecting a truth that lay somewhere in between. That's why Jewish law follows Beis Hillel. He would articulate it. He was a master, and he would say it. Since he would articulate it and give it credence, They all knew that he was searching. All of them were searching for the truth. So if he would articulate, Beishamai, Shammai, my friend, and my disputant would say X, but I'm saying Y, everybody knew that if Hillel was acknowledging and stating the other party's point first, that means Hillel internalized it, thought about it. Again, certain things they, of course, agreed to, but since he brought down his disputants first, they knew that this was reflective, and the law throughout the Torah is like Beis Hillel. The next time you find yourself in an argument, get the picture straight. Don't take any ideas for granted, even if you think you understand what they mean. Listen for the message. That's what I was speaking about before. Very often the fight is about something entirely different than you thought it was. Maybe underneath the other person is feeling he doesn't respect me or he takes me for granted. Get the message, not only the words. Ask, what is her point? What does she mean? What does she want? Now, men have a much harder time of doing this than the ladies do. We have to work on it harder, but the ladies have to work on it too. You have to, when you're having an issue with somebody, we have to go deeper. What does it mean? Again, like he just gave that example. Maybe you're getting into a fight, but what really it is, he doesn't respect me, or he takes me for granted. I was just speaking at a Sheva Brachas, and I was saying, Rav Noach has in his... He has so much on love and marriage, and on the Aish site you can see, and he speaks the most foundational, I'm using that word a lot tonight, need of a woman in a marriage, or a woman in general, is to feel cherished by her husband, and the most important need for a man is to feel respected. Again, so simple, but so profound, it's so true. So to give the example again, if the never tell a wife that that she's not looking good, or the food isn't good, and with a husband... Never say the word "or fine." You look fine. Get out of the house. You look fine. Get out of here. Right. So, and also, like with a husband, to be respected. The example he uses when he comes home from the all day at work, don't be on the phone with your friend. You know, get off the phone. And as I say, just make some noise before you come in, so she'll know. Yes. 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 That is good. That is good. Please tell that to my wife. That is really great. I like that a lot. He was saying, this is also an insight, all of the like insights that somebody said. When somebody gets upset at you, how did you not come to my party? You know what is that really saying? When somebody's confronting you, typically, especially if it's a family, that means they're hurting. They're hurting, and that means they need you. But you, that's what the whole concept of tonight is. Listen effectively. We have to listen effectively. Don't be busy getting your answer ready while the other person's talking. Through questioning, you'll find there is always something deeper. Ask the person, do you mean to say so-and-so? Please tell me. There was a Rabbi Stauber, Rav Shmuel Stauber, Olav HaShalom. I went to one of his classes. I should have gone to thousands of his classes. And he was teaching about imago therapy. What? Imago therapy. About mirroring. He would say if you're having an interaction with somebody, a family member, typically a spouse, and they're saying, and they're coming in, or a child says, my foot hurts me. So the first thing is to mirror them. Your foot hurts you? In other words, mirror. Again, this is so simple yet profound. My foot is hurting me. I understand your foot is hurting you. So already the child or the spouse knows, or anybody for that matter, worker, employee, parent, knows that they get it. Then to empathize and say, I can imagine how much that hurts. So you want to mirror? Then you want to empathize and say, I can imagine how much it hurts. I forgot level number 3 because I didn't look at the notes before, if anybody remembers. But there are 3 steps to it. One is to mirror, one is to empathize. But that is all part of listening effectively and you're showing that you're doing it. Once you think you understand the idea, make the effort to say it over in your own words. Like I was saying, I mean, he just said actually to mirror, to say your foot hurts. I mean, I don't know how you say that differently. Similarly, choosing Our own example to illustrate what others are saying forces you to zero in on the essence of that idea. It's a good test to see if you understand the messenger to help you integrate and remember it. Negotiators do this all the time. Good negotiators do this all the time. Whatever the other person says to you, you know what, Harry, I want to kill you. So you come back to them and say, so you want to kill me. Again, so you know, whenever you always want to repeat back, and that defangs what the other person wants to say. Hey, the guy across the table understands my thought. Like Beisel and Beishamai, once they understand my thought, I can talk to them. It's interesting because we spoke in the beginning over here not to be emotional. I'm just reading a book that somebody bought me from here called Getting More, written by a Wharton professor who's one of the top negotiators. And one of the big things he was writing in there is don't be emotional. When you're negotiating, again, this is something very hard for me, don't be emotional, because it takes away.
Again,
much easier said than done. I have a very hard time with that. I have a very hard time. Right, when you feel strong. Very good. 2 points. That's wonderful. Okay, thank you. That was great. This is such a great class. It's wonderful. Okay. Don't be a zombie. I put a star by the next part. Don't be a zombie. Laziness is holding us back. Creatures use our best instruments effectively. Wings, claws, beaks. But man frequently fails to use his best instrument, his mind. Man will go to any amount of work to avoid thinking. You can read the Times for a few hours and then nothing. Blank. It's a great feeling, but what does it mean? What did you learn? Get into a defining mode. Acquire the habit of analyzing what's happening around you. Anything worth your time, reading the paper, a novel, having a conversation, watching a movie, touring, should be productive. Always define your goal ahead of time. What do you want to accomplish? We got to do that. We have to plan in advance. I'm going to work. I'm going touring. I'm reading the paper. What do I want to get out of it? So I'm going to read 6 hours or 2 hours. Okay, what am I getting from it? Then afterwards, articulate what you learned. If you don't articulate, you'll wind up living with intellectual confusion. For example, people who get fired from a job say, they learned a lot. You know what? I learned a lot. Now I know I can't trust employers. I'm incapable of a successful career. That the business world is hell. And blank, 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 blank. They didn't learn. They're not getting the right message. That's not what you're supposed to learn. What you should learn is the importance of studying the keys to a successful career before you get a job. In Judaism, we go a lot deeper. We say clarity or death. Death is the complete absence of consciousness. Reduced consciousness is therefore partial death, like I mentioned before when you were sleeping. Either you know what you're living for, you know what you want, you know what your pleasure is, or else you're living like a zombie. That's why we need definitions. It gives us clarity. There's in the Gemara, it brings down an interesting point. It says Rabbi Yochanan, who was one of the great, great masters in the Gemara, he lost 10 children. He lost 10 children. He lost, and Rashi, I believe, even says that he carried a bone. We can't even describe it. One of his last child, he carried a bone with him, and he didn't need therapy. He didn't need therapy. And Reish Lakish, who was his disciple, passed away, and all of a sudden he fell apart. So the Rav, Rabbi Rudinsky, asked this at times in the past, what does that mean? What does that mean? He was able to handle the worst. We can't even fathom what that means. The Tsar Iyov, and all of a sudden, because even if he had a close relationship, his disciple passed away. So it says that Reish Lakish would challenge him in his learning. He would challenge him in his learning. Still, we can't understand that. Okay, so that's a wonderful thing. He lost 10 kids, and he's okay. He lost some of your challenge in his learning. This is what Reb Noach is saying here. Of course, what destroyed him was the fact that his kids were killed. Of course, that's what did it. But what kept him going? Once if he was focused, able to focus on the Torah, on his learning, on that dynamic and that pleasure in life, He was able to withstand the hardest challenges on humankind. Once that was pulled away from him, then that's what happened. So clarity, in the Gemara it says there, clarity or death, he couldn't live anymore. In other words, since he didn't have that, he didn't need students that would just tell him, you're Rebbe, you're right, you're right, you're right. He wanted a bar plukta. That's also part, we're getting a little taste in the Gemara. What is this all thing? It's all machlokas, all throughout the Shas. Rav says something, Shmuel says something. What is this? The way you get clarity is by being challenged. That's why it's all shakla v'tayr in the Gemara. Why don't we just give statements? Just say law one, law two, law three, law four. What is this? We're spending countless hours on it. You sharpen your mind, question and answer. The manishtana, the simplest things. We could just say four things. We eat matzah and we have maror and we drink and we dip two times. Why are we asking a four-year-old kid to ask a question? Because when you ask questions, and teachers can tell us this, when you ask questions, then it opens the mind. It opens the mind. It can't just be statements. It gets boring, and you can't sharpen the mind. So it's clarity or death. Torah wisdom, the final part. Proper definitions are especially important when you're learning about Jewish heritage. Taken at face value, the Torah may appear simplistic, like I mentioned earlier. We know from tradition that the deepest concepts are contained within the Torah, often encoded in simpler messages. Every word is carefully chosen. The Torah looks even simple. The Torah looks very simple. I heard this, I think, from Rabbi Fourier as well. The Torah is a bunch of stories, and Avram and Sarah, and it's all very simple. But you can spend your whole life, the depths, that's all. It's like, I think it was Rabbi Fourier said, the Torah is like, the Torah Shebaksav, the Torah that we have, is like a beautiful jewelry box. But the Torah Shebaal Peh has the actual diamond inside. There's so much depth and depth and depth. There's a superficiality, but our job over here is to take it much deeper. If the Almighty, if Hashem is speaking, you ought to understand exactly what He's saying. When we speak of Torah, we're speaking of God and eternity, forever. We can't afford mistakes in this area of life. A mistake in understanding Torah is a mistake for eternity. It's like sending a rocket to the moon. If you send it in a general direction, I'm going to send it up. I'm going to point up to space. But you're off target by a fraction of a mistake in a logarithm of the arc, something so minute that we don't even understand, we can't see with our eye, then you're lost in space. I saw this line over here, eternity. I'm reading that line again. A mistake in understanding Torah is a mistake in eternity. I was thinking about this eternity, our actions in this life. It's if you think about it for a minute, it can really, it's frightful, but it's awesome. We're here for minutes in this world. We are here for minutes in this world. Our actions here in this world is going to determine our eternity. It's frightening. It's frightening. I've heard from this before. I forgot who I heard this from, but also something to remember, that they said that if those that are not among us, the departed, would be given one day or an hour to come back to the world, and they'd be in the cemetery, and they'd be given an hour to come in the world, and they'd rise from the dead, they would not even say hello to their immediate family members. They would have 60 minutes here. They would run like a missile to do mitzvahs, to do good deeds, to help, to do chesed, to learn. They wouldn't take a millisecond to stop and say hi to their grandchild. We are here such a limited amount of time. I was just thinking about this the other day. Our eternity, it's not 10 years or 20 or 30 or 50 or 80. Eternity, think of 1,000 years. Our action, that means every single day and every minute, we have to be like kids. I tell this to my kids, we have to be like kids in a candy store. We must be like kids in a candy store or an adult who won some game that they have 10 minutes in a bank vault to pick anything they want from Fort Knox. They're not going to sit there and have a cup of coffee and just use the last minute of their life. They have 10 minutes, they're going to take the big bars of gold. We need to do this. Time goes by. Time is going by. It just goes and goes. We're killing time. And just think about that concept. I try to put it in my mind. Every single person that's departed, if they would be given here 1 hour, would not say hi to their kids. They wouldn't take the millisecond to say hi. Because they know that their entire eternity, they'll say hi to the kid in 120. Where they are in eternity is going to be determined among the minutes that we have here. That's a major takeaway. But what? You can say, it would be a mitzvah to say hi. But you get the concept I'm saying. I hope you understand the concept I'm saying. Let's take an example. We're finished here. The Torah says that there's a commandment to know there's Hashem. So ask, what is a commandment? What does it mean to know? Who is God? Define your terms in order to get behind the message and discover deeper ideas for life. Decode the key. There's a crucial final step as well. Always ask yourself, now that I understand, what am I going to do about it? So we're speaking about listening. I understand something. Now we're at the do. Like I sometimes say, there are three parts. Something that I'm thinking about, I'm feeling, like I give the different things that we want to do in life. If I want to give tzedakah, I'm thinking about it, I feel it's a good thing to do. Then there's a feat. What am I going to do? What am I going to do? I can think and be concerned about tzedakah for 10 years. You need to do. So here are the takeaways. Why is effective listening an ingredient in wisdom? Listen and silent have the same letters. 2 points for Reb Noach for that one. Get the picture straight, especially when you're emotionally involved. Again, not to be emotional. I just saw that in that negotiation book from the Wharton professor. Don't fall into the trap of the I, you, he game. We all do it. I'm great, he's so bad, and to the person, you're okay, and the other guy's a loser. That it can't be that way. Don't fall into that. Without definitions, you can fool yourself into thinking you're living the good life. All of the terrorists think they're good. All of the murderers think they're good. They're doing the right thing. I'm doing the right thing.
Got a message from God.
Right, you got a message from God to do it. No one wants to be a bafufstik. I think we can all agree to that. Torah contains powerful tools for living. Make sure you dig out the depth of the meaning. Part of tonight, dig. There's no use arguing if you don't know what you're arguing about. There's no use learning if you don't know what you've learned. There's no use in taking action if you don't know what you want to achieve. If you use this tool for the rest of your life, you are rich. Is that all? Okay. And that was number 2. Listen effectively. If anybody has any questions, further questions, I'm...